Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 1:12, and that is Pacific Summer Time. And today is April 28th. And today it was really all the action kicked off in Japan, where the Nikkei was down over 3.6%. And that was in a direct response to the strengthening of the yen, which was a follow-on from the Bank of Japan's decision not to increase its monetary stimulus, that they decided that they were going to wait and see what was going to happen with or how the market, the economy, would react to their negative interest rate policy, which they introduced at the beginning of the year. Now, this represented a shock for the majority of people, for the majority of markets. Market participants, economists might not have been expecting it, but certainly the market was expecting an increase in quantitative easing, and they didn't get it. So the bearishness that had been expressed in the dollar yen was quickly unwound, and this was a large downward dynamic to test the lows for the dollar. For the dollar in here. So this was a very large shock, and you see that the Nikkei is encountering resistance now in the region of the moving average, and that confirms resistance in the region of the trend mean, and it reaffirms the medium term downtrend. So you'd need really quite a large countermanding upper dynamic to begin to suggest that demand dominance is returning into the Japanese market. And the problem with this sort of slapdash approach, where they do one policy and then they stop doing that and they try a different one, rather than accelerating their attempts to reignite growth and just doing both at the same time, the way that people are going to interpret that is that it's a slapdash approach, that they don't really know what they're doing, and that then as a result, it's a more volatile environment, because the central bank is being volatile, and that means it's going to be a difficult environment overall to deal with, because if the Nikkei deteriorates very much further, then the central bank will be almost beholden to the market, because of the impact it's likely to have on the economy, to introduce additional quantitative easing. So this is by no means a story that is over. But when you have a major market like that deteriorating, then it does have a knock-on effect. And in Europe today, the majority of markets were relatively unchanged. The Italian market was probably the one that was up most. It was up 1.2%. But then you look into what happened on Wall Street, and in the last hour of trading, the Dow finished down 1%, the Nasdaq over 1%, and the S&P down just a tad less than 1%. So, and something that we've been talking about in the audio, both David and I, over the last couple of weeks, is that our base view was that there's going to be a rangy environment overall, but that the S&P in particular and the Dow Jones are at the upper side of that range. So the potential for some consolidation of what has been an incredibly impressive advance from the January lows is looking more likely than not. And then look at the Nasdaq, for example, where it has rallied very impressively from January and gone up almost for 10 weeks in a row. Then it pulled back with Apple yesterday and has broken the progression of higher reaction lows since the beginning of January. So now the question is, at what point is it going to find support? Because it is looking increasingly likely that a lower high has now been posted, and then we're in for some additional consolidation and increased volatility. Well, that volatility isn't likely to really change. You had a big move in Facebook today, where their earnings came in ahead of expectations. So the share shot ahead and finished off the high, and not least because they're splitting their share in much the same way that Google did, and they're going to give Zuckerberg greater control over the company, and so that he won't be diluted out of his ownership of the company when they decide to issue new shares to make acquisitions. And I wasn't a big fan of that when Google did it, and I'm not a fan of it when Facebook does it either, because it decreases the role that shareholders have in the company. And from in terms of governance, that's not generally a good idea, and it's something that investors are probably going to stomach as long as things are going well. But well, things don't always go well, and then people will really rue when they look back and say, "Well, how did we ever let that happen?" Now, then tomorrow, we're probably going to have additional volatility because Amazon released its earnings just after the close, and they came in above expectations. I think they were expecting $28 billion, and they got between, I think, 28 and 30. So I think in after hours, Amazon's share is up 10%. And, you know, that is helping to support the Nasdaq in after hours trading. But nonetheless, we're also going to get the update for the corporate profits chart, and at some point today, at least Bloomberg says it's going to be updated after the close on the 28th, but it hadn't been updated when I started the audio. And but when we look back, then what we're seeing an increase of is single stock volatility. That the fact that Amazon can jump 10%, the fact that Facebook can jump, I think it was 8% at the open today, and that other shares can pull back by similar margins, and that is not just, those aren't isolated incidences, but that this is a return to the kind of single stock volatility that we had in the third quarter of last year. And we know what happened when that single stock volatility got to a point where it started moving the needle in terms of the volatility evident for some of those automatic trading systems. We had a large an accelerated pullback, and it also contributed to the response that we'd had from the kind of flash crash that we had at the end of August. So I do think that we are in a more risky environment, and not least because we've already had a big rally and we are at an area of potential resistance, and there is increasing evidence that indices are encountering resistance in the current levels. Now, the other ramification of the Bank of Japan's move today was that it threw the focus of attention back onto the fact that there is a substantial quantity of global government bonds trading at negative yields. And for Japan, that is every issue out to 10-year maturities. And it's a similar story in much of Europe. And it's over $1.5 trillion, or the equivalent of $1.5 trillion, is trading at a negative yield. Now, one of the reasons that people, in fact, the two primary reasons that people have always argued that you shouldn't own, or that you shouldn't consider gold an investable asset class, is because of the cost of storage and because it doesn't pay a yield. Well, ETFs largely outflanked that argument about storage. And the fact that so much debt is now trading at a negative yield, the very fact that precious metals don't pay any yield, gives them a competitive advantage. And gold today was stronger by $20. It's now right towards the upper side of what has been a six-week consolidation. And this continues to look like a first step above the Type 2 bottom. Silver pushed on to new closing highs in here today. So did platinum, and palladium is also looking quite firm. So then you have strong commonality right across the precious metals. And then people are starting to think, well, governments are playing with fire when they're adopting so many extraordinary measures. And nobody knows, including themselves, exactly what's going to happen. So maybe I should have some precious metals, and they're not particularly expensive relative to their peaks at the current levels. So that's a reasonably compelling argument. And against that background, then the Gold Bugs Index broke out again. That index has doubled since January, and then now it is breaking out of a short-term range and reaffirming on the upside. So, and this is further evidence that gold shares are now offering leverage to the gold price. And that isn't something that they were able to do during the last gold bull market, for the simple reason that there'd been no investment in new mines in decades. So they just spent every available penny on increasing supply, or increasing their ability to increase supply. And that got them into some severe trouble. when prices started to come down. So they've cancelled everything. They've fired slews of workers, and particularly administrative staff, and they're now running much leaner operations. And that means that with higher prices, then profitability is improving, and free cash flow, which is something they didn't have for much in the last 10 years, is actually you're really mounting up. So that's one of the reasons why people are now starting to look at gold shares, because they really are offering leverage to the gold price. And, you know, with all those worries, then bond prices are a bit firmer in here today, and particularly gilts and bunds. But when we look around, then it's hard to suggest that bonds represent the same kind of safe haven that they have done. And certainly there are arguments why bond yields don't have to go very much higher here, when central banks are going to be very reticent about raising rates. But it is, I guess, worth considering too that the Fed's inflation measures are inflation came in a little bit higher in here today, and we're going to see what wages were like in the first quarter on May 6th. And you know, it was really because wage growth was breaking out that was the tipping point for the Fed to raise rates. So it's worth us keeping a very close eye on exactly what happens there. And there's no doubt we live in interesting times when people are getting paid to take out mortgages. So, and that's certainly in the case in a number of European countries right now. So, you know, we are definitely in extraordinary monetary conditions right now. And that is generally positive for fixed assets, and certainly precious metals are in there, and oil was additionally firm in here today, and the commodity currencies. And I was just looking at that commodity currency ETF before I came on to do the audio, and it also went to a new recovery high in here today. And the question is whether there's a chicken and egg scenario, whether it is the rebounding commodities is helping to reignite interest in commodity currencies, or whether it is the weakness of the dollar over the last few months has reignited interest in commodities. And I suspect there's a little bit of both there. But a point I've been making is that it really is worth considering oil and certainly the commodity currencies separately from the major cross rates, such as the dollar, euro, and dollar yen. And that the commodity currencies are really quite depressed, and they do fall into the same kind of category as some of these commodities, and particularly oil and the precious metals, where this is continuing to be a big short covering rally and a response to what is increasingly a supply inelasticity environment, because when you've taken some supply out of the market, then it takes a little bit of time to bring it back on, and prices can rally in the intervening period. So it's also worth considering to watch that Baker Hughes rig count, because when it turns, that is likely to be the catalyst for when oil prices do eventually turn. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.